scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manoogian of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man, as man is reduced to a material object. It's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manoogian making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Religion has been a force for evil throughout history. Religion is supposed to make people behave for fear of the hereafter, but this doesn't seem to have deterred people in the past. I think the conventional afterlife is a fairy tale for people afraid of the dark. One can't prove that there wasn't a creator. All one can do is offer a more reasonable explanation, based on science. Ever since the Greeks, we have managed to explain what previously seemed acts of God in terms of scientific laws.
The famous voice of physicist Stephen Hawking, who died today, his reflections on religion and the existence of God, the belief, well, he says religion is a belief held by people who are still afraid of the dark. No doubt he will take his place in history and in the history of science along the greats that have occupied his place in academia, like Isaac Newton, or the greats like Albert Einstein. What was his work? What was his legacy? We're going to talk about that for the next few minutes of Issues Etc. Joining us to do so, Dr. Brian Miller. He's research coordinator for the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute, holds a Bachelor of Science in Physics with a minor in Engineering from MIT and a PhD in Physics from Duke University. Dr. Miller, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Would a belief in an intelligent design or an intelligent designer have impeded Stephen Hawking's landmark work in theoretical physics?
No, I mean, what Stephen Hawking was doing, he was applying general relativity to black holes. And when he did that, he came up with what are called singularity theorems. And they basically talk about how when you're in a situation like a black hole, you have a situation where it goes to infinite, either infinite curvature of space or infinite density of mass. He then talked about what does that look like for cosmology or the beginning of the universe. And essentially, his theorems presented the idea that if you go back far enough in time, the entire universe started with a singularity. So the implication of that is that you look at time, space, matter, and energy, and it all began. And that actually is very deep theistic overtures, because the question becomes what started it, because nothing starts itself. So from a philosophical perspective, it looks like there's some intelligence outside of time and space that started everything. So his theories and models, at least the early ones, fit very beautifully with the theistic view of the world.
Who was Stephen Hawking? Give us a brief bio, if you would.
Stephen Hawking was a very famous physicist. He is a very famous physicist. And he was in the UK, where he received his PhD, and he worked with a man named Robert Penrose. And Penrose was a legend when it comes to cosmology. And his thesis, essentially, was dealing with the idea of these of general relativity, which is a description of how mass bends space. And what Hawking did was he talked about how if you've got a situation of a large amount of mass, what takes place is the space tends to compact until the point where you get a singularity. If you look at a black hole, for instance, if you have a star and it compresses. And that was a huge breakthrough, because then he was able to apply that to cosmology or the beginning of the universe. So some of his ideas, which he worked with Penrose on, were quite revolutionary in describing the early universe as having started with essentially this infinitesimally small matter and energy at the beginning of time.
So he was, his work, although he focused on many of his theories on black holes, had a strong bearing on questions of origins.
Right. Yeah, because what happens is the big significant fact of the black hole is if a star is large enough and it collapses, then you have a situation where you have gravity keeps pulling things smaller and smaller and smaller, and it's called a black hole because not even light can escape it. And you're dealing with enormous densities and masses in very small volumes, and that's exactly what the early universe looked like. Because if you look at, let's say, Einstein's work, you look at other cosmologists, Lemaître, you look at Friedman, what they realize is when you solve general relativity equations, it describes the universe as expanding. So naturally, if you go back in time, you get a smaller and smaller volume until the point where the early universe looks just like a black hole.
Why do you think that a man like Stephen Hawking, who is obviously possessed of tremendous intellect and ability like so many others who kind of occupy that same space in physics, to imagine things and through that imagination then craft theories that are later demonstrably true, why do you think he eschewed the idea of God as a first cause?
Oh, sure, that's a fantastic question. Well, what happens is all of our beliefs are conditioned through culture. So people would like to think that everything they believe is something they thought through, they looked at the evidence. But inevitably what happens is we're shaped by our environment, by our peers. And what's happened since the Enlightenment, which is a period in European history, where society was shifting away from believing in a creator to believing in the idea that if there was a God, that God would be outside of time and space, wouldn't be involved in the world. So that's kind of the culture that's been brought up in science. So if you are a scientist and you believe in a creator, you believe in a God that intervenes in the world, you can face a tremendous ridicule, a mockery. So it's just culturally is not something that's comfortable believing. Plus, what happens is when we decide things like if there's a God, then that has other implications. Like, what does that mean about my choices, about my life? So people, their willingness to accept a creator or reject a creator is partly due to the evidence, like science, but largely is due to what people want to believe. Do they like the idea that there's a power greater than them that destroys their autonomy, that defines their future? So there's probably a lot of personal reasons. I can't speak to what they were, but I can speak to the fact that his science was very consistent with the creator, even if for personal reasons he may not have wanted to believe in one.
He was also, like a good scientist, willing to pursue ideas that were rather unorthodox. I mean, he has a form of radiation named after him that was essentially his idea that the black holes that are not supposed to allow any information out actually do, over time, emit radiation, and I think he would even say, given enough time, evaporate. Talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, he was definitely a brilliant scientist and a pioneer on many levels. And what happens is that the whole idea of black holes is so interesting because what can take place is normally you have matter and antimatter that can appear suddenly. But what happens is the amount of time that it exists directly relates to its mass energy. So they usually only appear for a moment and then vanish in microscopic time periods. However, when you're dealing with a black hole, you've got this gravitational pull so that if you have a matter-antimatter appearance, what can take place is that the negative energy resulting from the gravitational pull of the black hole can compensate for the positive energy that dealt with the creation of that matter and energy. So you can actually get this radiation moving off the black hole, which is a brilliant idea. So yes, he absolutely was a pioneer. But what happened, though, is you find that he was willing to pioneer in areas that were philosophically comfortable for him. So that's not something that would challenge your view about bigger questions of life, like is there a creator, what's my purpose in life, different things like that. In fact, what's interesting is in later work, like I think he wrote a book called The Grand Design, and he talks about how he tried to get around the idea of a singularity. And the way he did that was he essentially presented an idea called imaginary time. And when you take imaginary time, which is essentially taking time and multiplying by an imaginary number, and you plug it back into the equations, you then can create kind of this boundary region, which is not so much a point or a singularity, but it's more smooth. However, if you actually translate his work back into the real world, you still get a singularity. So what's happening is he's using his brilliant mind, his intellect, his abilities to try to push against the idea of there being a creation event. And people that have reviewed his work realize that he's really bending over backwards to deny something that his work actually supports. So he's a pioneer, but he also is trapped within his own assumptions and perspectives.
Do we know how he would have reacted or dealt with the fact that so many of his predecessors in that famous Cambridge chair he occupied for 3 decades, I believe, all the way back to the likes of Isaac Newton, that so many of his predecessors in that prestigious Lucasian chair at Cambridge were at least theists and many of them Christians?
Oh, yeah. So how would he have reacted to that? Well, what he probably would have done, and this is what, let's say, Richard Dawkins would do, people along those lines, or Lawrence Krauss, is they would say, well, these scientists were in a Christian culture, so they were raised to believe in a creator, and that belief had nothing to do with their science. So somehow their belief in what they would consider a superstitious God was something compartmentalized from their belief in science. So what they would try to do is argue that their science was independent of their religious belief. However, that's not really true to history, because if you look at like an Isaac Newton, you look at a Kepler, you look at almost a huge percentage of the early scientists, it wasn't that their faith was incidental or separate from their science, but it was instrumental, because to do science, you have to believe that the world is orderly, you have to believe that there's structure to it, and you have to believe that we have the ability to understand the order that the Creator put into existence. So it was their faith that compelled them to do science. They felt that there was a creator, therefore the universe should be orderly, it should be driven by simple principles, and that inspired them to look for those principles. Now, if you believe that we're simply here by chance, there's no reason to believe we could do science. Like, why is it that our brain, which in principle just evolved to eat food, to flee predators, to reproduce, why should our brain evolve to understand things like cosmology, the expansion of the universe, quantum mechanics? That doesn't really make sense. It's really surprising. Why is it that physics is driven by such simple and elegant mathematical structures? That really only makes sense if there's a creator that created it in a way that was orderly and gave us the abilities to study it. So I'm guessing Hawking would just try to rationalize it away, but he would rationalize it away in ways that are unhistorical and not true to what really happened in the past.
He is famous for saying that religion is a set of beliefs for people who are still afraid of the dark. What did he mean by that, and how would you respond to it?
Right, and that's basically the idea. And this is a common narrative that you see all the time after the Enlightenment. It's this idea that, a very Freudian, so it's the idea that people are in a very scary world, and we need to make sense of our life, and if there's no God or creator, then our life is all there is. So that kind of leads people to fabricate ideas. Like we create the idea of a God, like Freud would say, because of some sort of Oedipus complex or a desire for a father figure. We create a God to make up the idea of an afterlife to comfort us. That would be the logic of what people say. But the problem is that's kind of a spurious argument. It's simply saying, trying to give a motive to something you haven't justified. You could easily argue for an atheist. An atheist tries to argue against a creator because an atheist doesn't like the idea that there's a final judgment, that they're accountable to doing what's right, that they deny the idea of a creator because they don't like the idea of moral rules, which they may have violated. So you can kind of make that argument every way.
Finally, then, one of the things that I think happened to Hawking later in his career, after his academic career, was he became what they call a science communicator. He wrote some books that were popularizing some of the subjects that he was an expert in. Now we're kind of surrounded by these experts in not only science, but even Hawking took on an aura of being kind of an authority on everything since he was obviously a genius. Why do we tend to vest people like Hawking or Neil deGrasse Tyson, other people like that, with an authority beyond their expertise?
And there's sort of a mystique with science. So if a person's a scientist, people assume they're just brilliant, and obviously they are quite intelligent. But the problem is people tend to be into idol worship. So we have this person that we really respect. So we think they know something about everything. And they may have a good publicist, so they can market themselves along those lines. And that's a huge danger, because what you find so often is scientists, as they become more popular and they have better publicists, often they'll branch into areas that aren't their expertise. They'll be more speculative. So the solid science may go down, and the speculation may go up. So that's kind of a cultural phenomenon. It's the same way that people might listen to an actor or a musician with much more authority on anything, even though they wouldn't necessarily have reason for that authority. On the other hand, what is nice about being in science is we are taught to look at the world logically, to know how to evaluate research, how to think critically. So there is certain training that scientists have that would lend greater trust, even if they spoke in areas that are outside their expertise. So some of that is justified.
Finally, if you had 30 seconds to kind of explain Stephen Hawking to someone who only knows the name from an occasional appearance on a sitcom like The Big Bang Theory, what would you say to them?
I would say that he was a brilliant scientist who produced a lot of very important theoretical developments in the study of our universe, the way our universe expanded over time. And his biggest contribution was, when you go back in time, he showed why it looks like all time, space, matter, and energy began in a singularity or a point in space, which has huge implications both scientifically and theologically.
Dr. Brian Miller is research coordinator for the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute. He holds a bachelor's in science and physics with a minor in engineering from MIT and a PhD in physics from Duke University. You can learn more about the Discovery Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Miller, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
As a pastor, I've seen this moment more than once, many times, in fact. It's that moment when you know death is coming. It often happens in a hospital, maybe in a nursing home or hospice care, sometimes even at home. It's the deathbed, and it's a sobering moment, to say the least. It's also a moment where standing silent is not always the best thing to do. There are words given us to speak, and we're going to talk about those words in a conversation with Pastor Brian Wolf Miller, and we'll discuss Christian emotions with him in Hour 2 of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Cradled in historic Perry County, Missouri, the manger of the Missouri Synod, Emmanuel Lutheran Church at 453 Northwest Street in Perryville proclaims God's Word and celebrates His Supper on Saturdays at 5:30 and Sundays at 7:30 and 10 using the church's liturgy contained in Lutheran Service Book, enriched with ancient and modern hymns. For more information, call 573-547-8317 or visit www.emmanuel-perryville.org.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
How was school today, kids?
Crazy. Hector's charioteer got hit by a stone, and his eyes fell out into the dust before him there at his feet.
Sounds like Patroclus was being hot-tempered, rude, and quarrelsome again.
He always is. Dad, what's for supper?
I don't know yet. Supper is such a problem.
If it's a problem, you can use the scientific method to figure it out.
Problem? We want supper. Hypothesis? I think Dad will make tacos.
Actually, I was thinking about spaghetti.
Tacos or spaghetti?
False dichotomy.
Is this the after-school conversation of your dreams? Registration is now open for the 2018-19 school year at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in the St. Louis area.
Hey, Dad, how did my violin practice sound?
Kiddo, it sounded epic.
Learn more at school.stpaulhamel.org. school.stpaulhamel.org.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.